Hi, this is Philip Meyer, welcoming you to another episode of Talking About Platforms.
And we are Daniel Trabucchi
and Thomas Buganza, the co-hosts of this podcast, where we present and discuss relevant discoveries from the field of platform research.
In every episode, we have a guest sharing with us one of his or her latest insights on platforms, starting from a paper, a project, or a book to make it accessible to everyone.
And with that, let's just jump right into the conversation. Welcome to a new episode of the Talking About Platforms podcast. My name is Philip Meyer, and today I have with me my regular co-host, Tommaso Boganza. Hi, Tommaso.
Hi.
And our guest for today, Geza Zima. Hi, Geza.
Hi, hello.
So Geza is a professor at the Hafen City University in Hamburg, Germany, where she heads the City Science Lab, which is a research lab that studies the future of cities with a focus on digital technologies, data governance, and new forms of citizen participation. Geza is also the academic director of UNITAC, which is a United Nations Innovation and Technology Lab that conducts global research on the use of technology in informal settings. And in our quest to, let's say, expand our own understanding of digital platforms and ecosystems, we came across Geza's multiple projects as they're bringing together private companies, public bodies, research institutions, and private citizens, treating cities as platforms to generate shared value with, I would say, a special emphasis on democratic values. This is something like novel to our format, looking at platforms more from a business model perspective, or often, while also implementing innovative measures to, let's say, reduce the bureaucracy and the cautiousness, which is especially known in the public sector, and that the public sector often applies to change. This is at least how I read the projects that I learned about on your end, Geza. But before we jump into that, Tommaso, I'm happy to hand over to you for the opening.
Okay, so thank you, Philip, and thank you, Geza, for being here with us. And yes, I mean, typically we have these discussions and chats about platforms. And one thing that we understood in these years is that there's not a single way to think about platforms. There's not a single meaning about platforms. And everybody, every single guest we had is providing us with a specific perspective on what they mean by platform. And so this is basically the first question that we would like to ask you. So when we say platforms, what do you really mean by that? And we are also curious to know how you ended up, making your work and research on platforms, because once again, different people, different stories, we all had our own path to get to platforms. So what is a platform to you, and how did you end up working on them and studying them and understanding them?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, first of all, for inviting me. Exciting topic. And I also think you can define it in very different ways. When you traditionally talk about platforms or platform urbanism, I think we all talk or think about big business and market-driven platforms like Uber and food delivery services, Amazon, and so on and so on. And there has been a lot of critical theory about it, because it creates a lot of social inequity. It's very capitalistic. It's disruptive as a business model, and so on and so on. There has been a lot of discourses going on the last decades, I would say, very critical discourses about this platform urbanism. My take on that is a bit different, I would say. I think it's not so critical. It's a bit more productive, because we are trying to set up platforms, urban data platforms. That would be my take on that is a data source. It's a data system that makes data available for people, for experts, and also for laymen, for collaboration, and also for interaction, or let's say interactive collaboration. So when we speak in the context of my research here in the City Science Lab, and also you mentioned UNITAC, it's more about how can we set up a good urban data management system and an urban data ecosystem. We also use this term of creating ecosystems that makes data available. We follow open source ideas. And how can we make this data accessible for people? How can we create stories? How can we help planning? How can we help creating scenarios, urban scenarios that is data-based, and also data decision-making? And when we do this, we create a lot of different applications. But the basis of everything is a good urban data platform. And this is where the term of platform comes from when I speak about it from an urban research angle.
And speaking about you mentioned the City Science Lab that you're leading and that you have been building and growing, maybe also coming back to the question of how did you end up thinking about platforms in this way? Maybe you can combine this with a little bit of the background of building also this institute and entering into platform urbanism and understanding this.
Yeah, I think I'm a platform, and I always speak about my team as a platform, because I always say that I don't want to have a kind of a team. I like to have a platform around me, so people that work in a non-hierarchical way with each other, creating energies and creating things together. And I like this term of platform, because it's open and it's decentralized. So that's a very crucial component of having a platform. It's, you can decentralize data, but you can also decentralize creativity, work forces, and so on and so on. And I think this term of platform is important for us, because when you speak about city planning, you have to bring together so many different stakeholders. It is always this quarter between civil society, the government, which is the authority, then science, which is us, and then there's industry. So we also work with companies. Huh? We do projects with Google, with different companies. And in this quarter, you have to create a kind of working workflow. And this workflow is usually a platform. It cannot be a hierarchy. We try to open it up, and we try to decentralize data so that we always try to empower also people, especially when we work with the civil society entities. It is a lot about empowering people and not telling their stories, but make them tell their stories. And platform is the basis of a lot of project setups that we are doing in a very international context in the UN, which is, again, a very specific work environment, because we have a lot of power relations when we work in low resource countries. But we also do it when we work here in Hamburg and in other countries in the world that are more high tech. So creating the project constellations and bringing together different stakeholders is a lot about creating good platforms and creating ecosystems. And data can help us to bring people together to make work also more interdisciplinary. This is it's highly requested in cities, because, you know, we have all those silos, we have all those authorities. The financial department doesn't speak with the social department, and they don't speak with the mobility department. But in reality, every city planning or urban design question is a highly interdisciplinary question, and data make it possible when we make them accessible on platforms that people can work together. And this notion of collaboration, again, I think is one of the most important skills when we speak about city transformation in a sustainable way. And it's still not well done in many, many cities. I also have to say that.
Well, I definitely buy that. Look, you said something very interesting at the beginning, because I said many cases, people, when we talk about platforms, we've got this business approach or marketing approach. And so it's easy for us to connect the word platform to very specific and very known examples like Uber or Airbnb or Booking.com and many others. Given that many of the people listening to this podcast probably do this connection. So we do connect the idea of platform to Uber. Now you're providing a different perspective on it. So this idea of a platform of data and, you know, making it possible the collaboration among different stakeholders. Do you have an example just to clarify that? So our listener can have another idea of platform with a specific example instead of always going back to Uber.
Yeah. I think an example is this whole field of citizen engagement, digital participation, or we call it also digital co-creation or digital collaboration. So in cities, citizens, they want to have a say. In democratic cities, they want to have a say, they want to have a stake. And this is not only here in Europe the case, it's also in many African countries, Latin American countries, all over. When you have a kind of like democratic governance, then the mayors or the state secretaries, they want to speak to the people and the people want to speak to them. So it's crucial for planning issues that you have to find a way of talking to people. And for Hamburg, for example, we set up this digital participation system. It calls DPAS. You can look it up. It's DPAS.org. It's an open source, very space-related software. And you can speak about citizen planning topics that are space related. So residential housing, park and environmental projects and so on. And so many different projects that have been already like organized with the software. So now we have a huge platform of citizen statements on that, which is also, I would say, a data ecosystem consists of citizen statements. They are all productive, some of them are provocative, some of them are very negative, some of them are very, very positive, but it's a kind of like chorus of what a city thinks about different planning issues. And for us, coming a bit more from the technical side, it was a lot about how do we create that software, how can we make it accessible for people. It can be used by a mobile phone, but you can also use it in events because many people are not so they are no digital natives, so they need a bit guidance. We have people who are not very good at working on maps. That's also interesting. They have no orientation and so on. They need a bit guidance. So there are different ways of putting your comments into that data ecosystem. And then the next step, of course, for us is how do we then evaluate on all the data? Because it's a lot, it's huge. Huh? And this is where, for example, a natural language processing comes in, machine learning. We cluster different terms or notions that have been articulated very often, or we can also evaluate on crisis areas because obviously people argue against something for different topics. So it's a big, I would say, data platform of citizen comments that is super interesting and that tells us a lot about how the city works, if people are happy or not, and who participates, who is not able to participate, and so on and so on. You can do a lot of research about that. But that's a complete different way, I think, of talking about a platform than talking about a platform in a way that you said it's not Uber, it's not market driven. It's more like activating and motivating people to speak about the cities. And of course, also handing it over to the planners. I didn't say that, but that's of course the most important step then, that they also use the results and can integrate it into their planning projects.
I mean, you said it is different, but I think in many ways, it's also quite similar, right? So you also, for example, what came to my mind, have to overcome what is often called the chicken and egg problem, right? Especially if you think about there should be like a critical mass of participants on the citizen side. And then you mentioned the planners, so that if I write a comment, that I also get some feedback and also have the feeling that my voice is actually heard and I can have some impact. So in such a project, how do you like overcome the chicken and egg problem?
Yeah, I think it's very interesting to talk about how such a digital platform is organized. So how do you address people? What is the question that you are asking? And how do you pre-structure a little bit the process? So because it's not that we open a process about, I don't know, extending the bike lanes in a specific quarter, and then people just can comment in wildly. Huh? That would never happen. We pre-structure, of course, a bit. We say, look, we have five different topics. One is about environmental protection. One is about flooding. One is about, I don't know, autonomous driving that takes place in that quarter. And another one is about sidewalks and so on and so on. So the way of how we pre-structure it at, on one hand, and but then on the other hand, to leave it also open so that people then also can comment in and doesn't feel too much manipulated already at the beginning. So that's a bit that's a bit the game. And I think it's super interesting that most, I would say 99% of the comments we get, not only here in Europe, also in other countries, are productive. We were terrified a bit about bashing at the beginning and so on and so on, but it didn't happen. So, I mean, people who participate in such processes, there is a kind of social selection, of course. They really want to contribute and they have an idea and they want to say something. So that's a bit how we do it. And I think it has to be very, very localized. That's very important. The more local it is, the better the comments are, the better the quality is. When you ask a question like, does Europe want a new currency like euro? If we did it like 30 years ago, it wouldn't have happened. So people would have said no, huh? Because people, they don't want innovation. They want to stay with that, the old system. But if you ask them a very, very local question about what about this park? Could we maybe change the usage of a park? What are your ideas? Then many. So you have to make people as local experts. Then it works well and they have a lot of expertise and they come up with good ideas. So I don't know if I answered your question, but that's a bit how we do it. And that's a bit our experience.
Well, the more you speak, the more questions I've got on my list. Now, the list is incredibly long and it's difficult to choose. But I mean, among the different things you say, there is, again, one that seems to be particularly interesting to me, because you say that, partially you were answering now, telling how you engage people into collaborating on these platforms. But before that, you say that, of course, there might be problems in terms of technology adoption. Not everybody is able to use things. Not everybody maybe has got the same access to the technologies, especially, I guess, depending on the country in which you are. How do you deal in this case with the inherent problem of the bias of the data that you are collecting? Because the more you've got a certain part of a population able or willing to do something, the more you are collecting data about that part of a population. So there is a possible inherent a risk of very huge bias into it.
Yeah, I think we cannot fully avoid biases. You are right. I agree. We try to address people very, very broadly. Huh? This is how there is in Hamburg, for example, there is in our Ministry of Housing and Urban Development, they have a department that focuses on citizen engagement and citizen co-creation. And they try to promote all the processes as wide as possible. So they are super active in also getting other people be involved. And this is one answer to your question. Another one is that We of course have this problem of missing data a lot. Huh? We have a lot of data, but we know also that a lot of social data, for example, is very often not there, especially also when we work in the global south, we lack of data very often. And in this case, we try to work with specific organizations that we are interested in, like NGOs, or we did a project, for example, on care mobility. So how do people move through the cities who take care of kids, of elderly people, of disabled people. And then we work together with an NGO that is for parents with disabled kids. And they came to our lab and they draw their maps on our touch screens and our software to explain us how they drive someone who's sitting in a wheelchair through the city, for example. It's micromobility. We don't have so much micromobility patterns. We know a lot of mobility in terms of logistics and private car mobility and so on. So that's another way of how we do it. So we try to engage with specific NGOs or specific target groups that can give us data that we don't have. And this is highly political. And I think it's very important that an urban data platform, of course, also have data that is done by or produced by people who are disabled, for example, in that case. Can be also a gender topic or many other topics. Violence against women, for example, is such a very often in many countries where femicides and so on happen. We don't have data because governments are hiding those data. Then we have to work with NGOs who know where we can get the data. The bias is still, of course, there. It's not, I wouldn't say that we can overcome it, but at least you can be aware of it and try to engage other organizations in it.
If I may, Philip, I got another one, and then I will give it back to you. I was thinking if, to any extent, would it be possible, anyway, to learn from the business or marketing cases like, you know, Uber and so on. I mean, one thing that these people seems to be very good at is in collecting data. But the way in which they do it is not just asking for data. So it's not that, you know, company like Google, they do not ask what you like or stuff like that. They offer you a service. The service is for free. You are more than happy to use the service because, you know, you get something for you, and you know, basically, now you should know, maybe some years ago or not, but now everybody probably is aware that you can get that huge, fantastic service for free because you are paying it back, giving your data. And probably your data for you are not so incredible or valuable. So the kind of reward that you get is very, very much. But if you put all the data of all the people together, there is a huge value for the company. So instead of asking for data, they somehow trade the data, providing services. So is this part of what you do, or is this applicable to what you do? So what is the current situation?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think we are a bit cautious with this because people we work with are very, very skeptical because they are very common goal oriented. We speak about cities here. We don't speak about companies. We don't speak about consumers. We speak about citizens. So it's a difference, huh? And when you like offer people something for free, they immediately know that the exchange is that we get the data. So we did it. We did it a bit we do it sometimes a bit when we do crowdsourcing, and maybe also mobility. We need data about bike behavior. How do people really bike? What kind of routes do they take? You can crowdsource, and then they get something for free. I don't know what it is. So we did it also. But I wouldn't say in our context it's that disruptive that it is when you think about Uber or Airbnb, because people want to know where the data goes, and they want to. We always have to make it very transparent how we use the data, and also we always explain people also the limits of data. So that's maybe also another answer to your bias question. It's very important that, for example, we speak about spaces. We have a lot of topics that deal with spaces. And then we have like 30 different criteria on spaces. Now, who owns the space? How big is it? Is it, what about climate topics? And so there's a lot of space related information that you can get on spaces. And then people come and work with us. And then they really want to know what kind of criteria is there on the space. And we really have to make it transparent. It's like 30 criteria. And then they start working with us. And one answer also, in Hamburg, we have a transparency law since already like, I think, 12 years. And this law forces people to give their data into the data platform of Hamburg. This is the reason why the Hamburg Urban Data Platform is the biggest in Germany because we have this law. But this is also a way of like making transparent what kind of data is in that urban data platform. So when we work with those data, people who come here, I can always say, look, you have access yourself. You can check about the data. You can evaluate. We don't try to manipulate data. And this is completely different when you work with a company. When we work with Google, for example, there is no transparency ethics behind it. Of course, they say that it is like that, but of course, the data is it's much more closed. So that's my answer to your question. It would be nice if we, we are a bit. It's I think it's a bit a different way of using this.
I'm a bit familiar with the with digital mapping and the use of geodata and the role cities also have in providing companies, even like Google Maps, Apple Maps, all the other mapping companies, with very, very important information about like road infrastructure, about public transport. And I think there's an ongoing regulation on the EU level to govern how platforms like Google Maps, like Apple Maps, can not just use data, but also have to give something back when they add value to the data. For example, collecting data about road infrastructure from a city, from some kind of, I think the German word is Katasteramt, basically like where are all the roads? And then something changes. And if Google notices, because they have huge amounts of data coming in, that there is a change and there is an update to give this back to the city, right? So is this also something that you, when you build this data platform in Hamburg or looking at the particular the one in Hamburg, to think about how to govern usage that it's, while it is like created mostly by citizens, by the city, a lot of effort that's going in, and if it's then available, that you make sure that the usage, be it commercially or non-commercially, but by private actors, accounts also for like giving something back and improving the value of the data set. This is something that you're familiar with?
Yeah, that's a big topic and one of my favorite topics, because companies, they use cities as test beds. Huh? They have done it already quite a long time. And it's interesting because technology in this whole field of smart city technology has been tested in deserts for a long time, autonomous driving and many different things. But now time is here that they have to test it in the city. So they need a real city to test autonomous vehicles, for example. And this is why a lot of companies come to cities and use the city, use the infrastructure, like you said, the roads or whatever it is, to test their technology and see if this is really ready for the market. And then I think, or I know that it's very important for cities to create good contracts with those companies so that it's a back and forth with the data. But what big companies, of course, want to do is that they get a lot of data out of the city, use it for optimizing their use cases, their business cases, but not giving back so much. So it's very important that cities have good lawyers and have good awareness of this and make good contracts so that data also comes back. And I give you an example. We just did a project here with Google. Google has a headquarter here in Hamburg. And this project was AirView. Google collected air quality data with a Google Maps car. You know how it looks like. There is this camera on top of the car, but they also have like sensors on the windows of the car. And these sensors, they collect air quality data. And this car drove through the city of Hamburg for almost a year. We collected all the data. Then our lab made use cases out of it. We connected the Google data to the urban platform data and tried to give some advices for like planning topics. You have that it has to be more green here, or we have a problem there, and so on and so on. And Google put all the data also to an open science platform so that the citizens and also researchers and whoever wants has access to the data. So that's a a very good example, I think, for your question. But we had to negotiate it also. It was not naturally given. So there was a bit discussion. But then at the end, I think it was a great project. And this data is now available for everyone. And you can use it for making simulations about air quality here in data in Hamburg.
So how is the Hamburg air? Taking a deep breath.
And then I give you an answer to this question because the authority of environmental protection here in Hamburg was very, very reluctant to work with Google because they have very specific sensors that they work with. And there are a lot of laws, European laws, about this. They call it Luftreinhalteplan. And they are very vulnerable if they use other like sensors and the results are different. So we create like hotspots because the Google car created hotspots. Then the authority is very, of course, cautious and say, look, but this is now our way of measuring it. We have like European regulation laws and rules, and we have to follow that rules. So it's highly political. And I can also understand the perspective of the authority, but on the other hand, all those big companies, especially the platform companies, they come to the cities, they do their projects, and they would have done it anyway, also without us. And then I always say, look, then let's do it together. Let's try to create an ecosystem, which is what I said at the beginning, bringing a lot of different stakeholders together and trying to figure out something together instead of like creating two silos. There's the company, there's the other authority, and they don't speak to each other. So that's platform urbanism for me, bringing people together and try to create bridges.
Well, I mean, you're making very interesting examples. And, you know, in many of the cases, you've got so many different stakeholders. So you got, in this case, you got also private companies, you got a city, you got the population, you got, you know, many different institutions and so on. So I was wondering, given that you have experienced many of these projects in different countries, and definitely in different cities in different countries, what is the key in terms of competencies that a city should have in order to start this virtuous cycle? Because, I mean, if I look around and I know many cities in the world, some of them actually are very active from this point of view, and some others are still, you know, lagging a lot. What could it be? So is there any kind of, triggering effect, something that is enabling these processes?
I think it's all about people. If you have dedicated CDOs or dedicated mayors or dedicated heads of authorities, then of course people try to get it done, and they bring people together, they create funding and so on and so on. And it's also, another answer is also a very strong political will for democracy. Our work is highly, highly political, and we very often come to countries. The first thing always we have to do, especially when we work with the United Nations, is that we have to align with the government. And you see immediately, and I find it highly interesting to go into all that meetings, you feel, I would say, in the first meeting, if someone is interested in making data transparent, making it accessible, creating digital platforms, making something out of it, fostering creativity. And there are also a lot of people, they really don't want that. They want to hide the data. They want to, there is this difference between government and governance in city planning. And the government is more centralized. It's the government that is organizing a country or a city. Governance means that I'm trying to engage as many people as possible. And you can feel immediately how cities and also countries sometimes tick in terms of, do they want to make it happen or not? And people are reluctant still. And they are also in Germany. There are really big differences between cities. And it's not always only about the size. We have a lot of also small cities that are very dedicated and very open, and they really want to be, they want to get their city digitized in a good way. I would say it's about people and it's about funding, but funding connects to people, of course. We have a lot of funding programs here in Germany and also Europe. I think funding is not so much our topic here. It's more when we work in the Global South, we have no funding there are low resources. That's not the case here in our country and in Europe.
We had David Eves on the podcast, who is working at the University College in London. A lot working on the topic of digital public infrastructures. And David shared many examples from more like developing countries implementing digital identities, digital payment systems, while developed countries were often, as you said, hesitant, although they have the resources. Now you're like very active globally in the project related with the United Nations. And how is it when it comes to like citizen engagement? Do you also feel that maybe as you said, the quest for more democracy, more, let's say, getting one's own voice heard, is this also something that you feel when you are working in like quote unquote more developing countries and the people, the local people there, like let's assume the necessary base requirements are met to initiate the project in the first place?
Yeah, absolutely. We just did a project in Botswana and Gaborone. We also used this DPaaS software that I was talking about. And Gaborone did a kind of like first, no, that's not true. They have a strong democratic tradition of also assemblies. So they come together and speak to each other on a very regular basis, but they haven't used digital tools so far. And they wanted to change a bit the system because they also have the problem that young people don't come anymore. It's so elderly people meet and so on. And there it was very, very active and very dynamic, and they came and they contributed, and they were also very critical about the tools. They wanted to know everything about the data and so on. So a lot of countries in Africa and also Latin America and also Southeast Asia, they have this very will for democracy, and they want that, and they want to use the tool, and they want to also learn how it works and so on and so on. And we have to adapt it then, of course. It's not that we just transfer a technical idea to the Global South and then they have to use it. It's a very agile way of adapting also the tools. And I think, can I give you another answer, Tommaso, to your question? Sorry, I'm a bit slow. Another answer would be for me, I would love to have more people with technical understanding in all those groups, expert groups. We see so many expert groups talking about smart cities. They come from humans, they come from the humanities, or they are politicians. They're representing something, but they have no technical expertise. And I would really love to have more tech people, computer scientists in those expert groups, because it's so much is about like open standards. It's also very technical. To answer your question, when does it work? It is also, if you have a good technical system that is very modular on one hand, and you can plug in different systems, and it's also a technical question. And very often that is not discussed, or they discuss it just at the end of the process, and then it's, of course, difficult.
So I was thinking about, the cities that I know and I've been collaborating with. I was trying to map them on this, list of characteristics, and it's very interesting what you're saying. And I think that in general, it's very interesting what you're saying, and we could stay here for hours, but more or less we are at the end of our time together. But we will not let you go without asking you a final question, that is, what's next? So what is the next super cool thing that you're working on or you're thinking about and you would like to share with us?
Can I give you two answers?
Oh, yeah, at least.
So in terms of technical innovation is that we are at the moment setting up a co-modeling platform, which means that a city has a platform, and on that platform you have access not only to data, you have access to different models. So climate models, mobility models, financial models. So, and to connect all those models is super interesting. And this is quite advanced. And we also do it with the authorities here in Hamburg. We invite them for workshops and we ask them, what do you think? What kind of models could we connect to each other so that we create value out of it? So it's highly technical, but we are very excited about the employees of the city who work with us here because they understand what we mean. So we want to open a bit the black box of an algorithm. So that's a problem for a city. Yeah? The city always wants to know, what is it about? What are you calculating? And with this co-modeling platform, we open a bit this black box and we make it a bit more transparent how algorithms have been done.
Is this increasing the level of engagement of these stakeholders, I guess, because they got more control or better understanding of what you're doing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And it's very exciting. I was skeptical about do we get people in? Is it too technical? I mean, it's about math at the end. Huh? So they model together, but it works well, and I'm super happy about that. So we are writing at the moment. We are going to write some papers about that. And my other question is working in the Global South. So this whole topic of informality is so strong in urban planning. We have like 30% of mankind lives in informal settlements. And how can we get data from the informal settlements included to the official data platforms of city governments is highly political. And it's very, very interesting. And I think it creates a huge impact. And it's also very fragile and very ambivalent because people are very aware of surveillance and power relations have to be reflected, and it's very challenging. But that's my new, I've done it already a bit, but I would like to increase in how to work in informal settlements with urban technology.
And that is extremely exciting. Thank you so much for sharing, and also thank you so much for your valuable time, Geza. We started with asking you, what is a platform? And you showed us so many like facets, right? You said you yourself, with your ability to connect different stakeholders, connect different people, act as a platform. Then you introduced us to your work in building like technology, building blocks for cities, for different kind of user groups in a setting where you enable public institutions or actors or agencies to like create new projects, for example, increasing citizen engagement. And then also the data aspect, right? Working with like public companies, but holding them accountable through the right data governance regulation applied by cities to make sure that there's no exploitation or at least like a reduction in power imbalances, I would say. So many aspects, extremely insightful and exciting conversation. As said, thank you so much for your time. I learned a lot. I'm sure our audience did so too. And just the best for your upcoming projects. And thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the questions and for this nice discussion.
Thank you to you. It was a great chat. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Talking About Platforms.
You can rate the podcast on every major podcast app. This helps us a lot in growing.
Visit talkingaboutplatforms.com to get the links of the short notes, reach out to us, and see the previous episodes.
Hear you in another episode to talk about platforms.